Blog Talk Radio.
Divine, all blessed, peace and love, joy and prosperity.
revelation and manifestation. You are listening now live to The Divine Prince, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, advisor, Udu Obeya Bokua, sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, evolutionary, revolutionary, healing, and holistic, result-oriented, from a Pan-African Udu world spiritualist perspective, understanding that all is indeed a blessing. If you can just see beyond the veil, for it is all just an illusion and a test in one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life level. This is my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, reverberation, reiteration, and my ever-living reality. And it is crucial to the very foundation of my understanding, my teaching, my walk, and my work along this divine, all-blessed, like path and journey. It is how I, the Divine Prince, make sense out of all that we are challenged with here in our daily existence on Mother, Father, Earth. And it is my personal place of power and understanding. The place from where I begin and the place from where I realize and crystallize all endeavors, understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine, all blessed reality. And so it is. Ashe. Today is Saturday, August 24th, 2013, and I am emanating and vibrating with you and for you live right now in this all blessed moment in divine time space, virtually, verbally, cosmically, quantum universally, from the working temple of the house of the Divine Prince, Chi Mecca, Chi Focus, and Udu Central. In this legendary, historic, beautiful, and enchanted, and some say most haunted city in America, New Orleans, Louisiana, the land of my ancestors and those who came before me along this spiritualist Udu Obeya life path and journey, passing down the great Obeya stick along with the knowledge of the healing, life-giving herbs, roots, plants, rituals, and minerals. I am humbled and honored by your listenership, your continued participation in this broadcast here at high noon U.S. Central Standard Time, broadcasting live and always in archive at your leisure and convenience in New Orleans. My live listening and call-in number is area code 347-215-8967, 347-215-8967. If you have a question, comment, or request, do press the number one on your telephone keypad. I will be more than happy to assist you. Let me first say, this will be one of those shows that either you are really not going to like this show, or this will be one of your favorites. And that is because, you know, this is not a show that I, you know, sort of write out and plan, and but it's a show that I've been meditating on and thinking about and praying about. And those of you who know what interacting with spirit really is, how that works and what that all about, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And it becomes something that you wake up with, you lay down with, you have it come back to you through other people, places, and things in confirmation. There's a lot going on in our city, in our country, in my neighborhood today as it relates to remembering, commemorating, honoring. I'm even hearing ancestral being spoken. And so naturally it would take some effort to not talk directly about that or to that. But it becomes much easier when you just sort of surrender yourself to And I'm going to come authentic today, maybe in a way some of you aren't familiar with when it comes to me. But I want to really go in, as I do with all of my original topics and subject matter that is multidimensional, a vortex of light and consciousness and awareness and understanding. And depending on where you are, you will hear what you need to hear, what you should hear, what you want to hear, and even that, as an example, is multi-complex, multi-dimensional. So I'm going to start the show with my newest priority question. A priority question is a question that I have in my heart, in my mind, in my spirit, as I go into any type of relation, communication with people, whether it's in the real world, whether it's in Congo Square, whether it's in my job, whether it's in spirituality and religion, whether it's in ceremony, whether it's in private conversation. And I can't take credit for the originality of my question. One of my strong elders and godparents and leaders introduced me to asking myself this question, and then this question became a part of my mantra, my active vibration. And it took some practice at first, because depending on where you are in the spectrum, there's some political incorrectness to it. Even the word itself, depending on who and where you are, has various degrees of light and darkness to it. And that question is, what is your agenda? What is your agenda? And it's something that, again, took some practice for me to do. All kind of feelings and emotions came to the surface, particularly when you look a person in the eye and they look you in the eye and there's that moment of connection. And you ask, what is your agenda? And for most people, if not all people, if you haven't thought about that, brought that into your meditation, brought that into your notes, brought that into your budgeting, brought that into your thought process, you may not necessarily be readily available with a response that feels fully to you in the moment, that feels authentic to you in the moment, that expresses who you are and what you're about and what your agenda is in that moment with clarity. It's sort of like going into a job interview and being asked and being unprepared to be asked, why should we hire you? Why are you working here? Or why do you wish to work here? What is your agenda? And again, not keeping with, but acknowledging the variant conversations that are happening right now, both locally, nationally, internationally. And as a spiritualist and as an empath, I don't have to physically be on the scene. That vibration, that tone, it's in the air. It's palpable. We can feel it. We can taste it. We can smell it. It permeates everything that we do. And that is why the illusion of isolation is just that, an illusion. The illusion of separation is just that, an illusion. Don't think for one minute what I put down the drain here on my street. And ooh, that's another conversation, because we have a rolling stream right now on our street that is not being addressed. Thousands of gallons of your clean, fresh water, our clean, fresh water, is going down the sewage right now on Josephine Street in New Orleans, but that's another conversation. But we've got to get to a place of authenticity, first with ourselves, with spirit, with the spirit realm, and that's multidimensional. We compartmentalize in this culture, in this society, in this day and age. It's sort of the tone. technology sort of lead sort of that tone. So we expect a certain level of simplicity. We expect a certain level of automation. We expect a certain level of ease. Not very put your money in, get something out, push a button, get a response. You know, Google this word, get your answer. You know, fast food, convenience. All those words are loaded with variant meaning, as is agenda. And that's why there's so much light and darkness around the word agenda in whatever language it is spoken. What is your agenda? What is your purpose? Why are you here? What is your goal? What do you seek to find? Now, keeping with my consistent multidimensional vortex of light and consciousness, even that is loaded and multi-level, depending on person, place, thing, situation, where you are in time and space. And some of you, you know, claim that's boring when you go into that. But it's crucial that I go into that. This is a spirituality and religion show. This is a voodoo show, for God's sake. This is a hoodoo show. You know, we're talking about, again, keeping with the understanding of agenda, magic, supernatural manifestation, spirit world powers, answers and resolutions where there otherwise might not be apparent. So if you really believe that, which I do, I stand on that, by the way, then you have to be able to think it, breathe it, understand it, dissect it, look at it at various degrees. It's a math. It is a science. Those courses, as they are taught in our world, are boring by nature. Only to the most enthusiastic of students, the most committed of persons. And that applies across the board, whether you are religious or not, whether you are quote-unquote university educated or system educated or not. We've even been loaded education now. Once upon a time, our strive and our drive was for knowledge and for education. And now in the day and time of instant fast food knowledge, we no longer value the knowledge. Now to say that I'm educated is almost a joke. You're almost discredited coming out the gate now in the quote-unquote conscious community if you build a platform on education. That somehow now devalues who you are. So the title of this show, Human Value, Family Value, Individual Value, Divine Value. And there's only a limited number of spaces. I could have taken that forever into infinity. Economic value, face value, monetary value. So I guess in spirit, when spirit speaks, spirit don't speak our language. So, trying to take some spirit, interpret some spirit into words that we understand, that we can accept, that we can make sense of, within itself is a challenge, especially in a day and time where we question and doubt everything, particularly that we say comes from some intelligence or from some studied educational preference. So first, if you're taking note, what is your agenda? Whether it's with me, whether it's with the show, whether it's with your journey on spirituality and religion, you know, we have all kind of ways that we say it and play it and flip it now. But what is your agenda? It could be your career, your education, your getting up and going to work every day. What is your agenda? And then I'm going to follow that up with, your agenda is evident already in your demonstration. So for those of you who accuse me of talking in, you know, philosophical parable limericks, there you go. What is your agenda? And going into that question, understand that your agenda is already evident in your demonstration. So let's break that down without going into the, you know, the holiday, you know, what's going on all around us. And we know what's going on all around us. We're remembering 50 years later, marches on Washington, civil rights, you know. It would be the easy route for me personally, as a person, as an individual, keeping with my topic, to go into those topics. Everybody's talking about that right now, so I don't need to. But I'm going to carry you in a very different direction. So I'm going to start with value. What is your agenda? Know that your agenda is evident in your demonstration. And how do you place your value? Now, understand that triangle there has to be formulated moving forward. Whatever your agenda, because they are interlinked in a way that I could do 10 shows just to explain how that's interlinked. When we talk about our multi-dimensional universe, our existing in 11 dimensions, this is scientific fact. This ain't mythology. This is science. We operate within 11 dimensions in order to make our quote-unquote real world real. So anywhere you are in the spectrum now, whatever you believe, whatever you imagine, whatever you can conjure, whatever you can create, already exists somewhere. Negative or positive is irrelevant. If you could think the worst thing possible, it's true and it's happening somewhere in another dimensional space, if not in your space or in our space, our shared space. But so too are those positive. Are those hopeful? Are those what we wish to be, if you will? Particularly if we are feeding them. So when we talk about value, where we place our value, and we can look at that in the face of, you know, the quote unquote teen birth rate, gun violence on many levels. Gun violence within itself is a multi-varied topic. We can talk about black-on-black violence. We can talk about too many weapons or not enough weapons being in our society. But we want to understand these things right now in this moment as they relate to value. Gay marriage, the Olympic team and their discussions with Russia about these laws and what do these laws mean? And we're still talking about value, human value, economic value, human rights, civil rights. All that stuff gets complicated and mixed together in real-world activities. So they cannot be separated if you're truly going to address them, think about them, meditate about them, pray about them, do witchcraft about them. You got to know what you're talking about. Abortion. We're talking value. That's high on the value list. Are we talking about human life? When does human life begin? Is it tissue? You know, and then you have the emotional scarring and baggage that individuals bring to that conversation that further complicate that discussion. And often the complications that further discussion are the discussion, but they also complicate the discussion. And we get caught up in the perfection of the argument that we miss the main point of what the argument is. And I'm making that simple for us today, and I'm calling it value. Dogs, animals, some would say, now have a higher value in our society than human life, than human sensibility. Then your right to be comfortable in your space may now be overridden by the right of an animal to poop, to urinate, to jump upon you at any place in society, not just in a public space, in your own yard, in your own house, in a place that we sort of assume to be dog-free, a hospital or a grocery store or a restaurant. So there are all kind of inroads to agenda and value. But from a spiritual, this is a spiritual and religion show, from a quantum metaphysical spiritual perspective, all of those things have to matter to us. And it's evident in our demonstration and what we do and how we operate, what we feed, and what we support. And we have to get real about that because, you know, again, we can turn on 10 conversations about this on Blog Talk Radio right now in varying degrees without ever really getting serious about the conversation. So today we celebrate a 50-year anniversary of civil rights and varying anniversaries within that 50 years of civil rights. I think that's being overlooked. There's a relative list of things, of signings, of laws, of passages that have taken place that sort of reinforce that 50 year and why that's such a big deal for some people today. And whether it's a production or, you know, we could discuss that, but it's not necessary to discuss it to get to my point, which is really about value. And that intersects with all of that activity on many levels. And I'm going to try in these 2 hours to cover it all. We value today based on bullet points that our parents and our grandparents did not value on. And value changes. There's a season or timing, if you will, to value. Our money has gained or lost value. Our precious metals, our gold, our silver, our platinum, you know, when you were in junior high school, how many of you even have heard the word platinum, you know? So values change. What we put a value on changes. Intellectual property has a value. Another word that in my generation, you know, totally new. Now, if you were born in the last 20 years, you've been born hearing that word, particularly if you've been a part of the technological internet movement. But there are many of us who are still operating in a season, in a time, in a period in history, whether it's through your technology, whether it's through your location. You know, if you live in a rural area, I have family right now that still don't have internet because they're in an area that's considered to be too rural. I have family right now in America, I have family right now who still don't have indoor plumbing. I have family right now who moved into the rural area from the big city and had to have their own road put in. They own sewer drains and runoff put in. Things that many of us who live in the suburbs, cities, the towns, the incorporated areas, you take for granted, even at the quote-unquote middle-class suburban level where you're moving just beyond the suburban incorporated area, they're now calling those areas incorporated versus unincorporated. It's a part of your city name. So the understanding has found its way into a more generalized use based on our individual experiences with it, but also collective experience with it. And even that forces us now to look at value. You know, the trees that are being removed to enlarge these communities, is that of a value, and to who and why and under what circumstances? Now, naturally, in one of those 11 interdimensional spaces, it's a value to all of us. It's a value to the future. It's of a value to the past. But when you bring it in to the individual value, you go from person to person, and you're going to get just as diverse a response to whether that's of a value to them or not. Animals, wild animals that are now being displaced, that are now being moved around, that are now being run over because of our development, is that a value? And of who is that of a value to? Now, some would suggest that PETA, you know, is over the top in their valuing system, that what they're doing is even harmful, and that they place, you know, animal life over human life. And there's all kind of ways to approach it, depending on your agenda. And that's why I began this show, this conversation, your checklist, if you're taking notes, with what is your agenda. And whatever the subject that we're talking about, you have a checklist by which to process things with. For me, what is your agenda is number one now. I don't care what the discussion is, what the topic is, what the relevancy is. All of that comes into clarity for me through my crystal ball of agenda. And based on where you are in the system, that word has some gravity for you. If you're an entrepreneur, if you're self-employed, if you're a business owner, if you're someone who's already in the economic system of your town, of your city, of your neighborhood, of your location, of your community, agenda has some meaning for you, some definition for you. And for those of you who are sort of floating along, and I'm not trying to be derogatory, though that could be, and I accept responsibility for that, but for those of you who are sort of living your life, doing your thing, you're not focused in on the land usage, you're not focused in on the water, you're not focused in on the wildlife, you're not focused in on the plant, and you have sort of devalued those topics, not thinking about the crossroads, not understanding where that information intersects with you until you're confronted with it. And there are all kinds of ways that we're confronted with it, through laws, through taxation, through lack, all of which we're going to discuss, economics, health, you know, just the removal of your trees can bring about certain health balances and imbalances in your neighborhood, in your community. Many of you aren't thinking as far as the faraway jungle of the world that are being decimated, where some of the Ebola and these other noxious diseases are being released from. Their natural place to sort of hide and develop and go through their evolutionary process without interfering with or intersecting with human contact. And see, value, as you just heard, just in that last 10 seconds, affects our conversation. It affects our word usage. It affects what we do. I find it very difficult to comprehend value and conversations of value on many levels with people who smoke and sort of consciously or subconsciously toss that cigarette butt with me standing there watching. And I think about what we're talking about today. I can, as a spiritualist, as an empath, part of my job as a visionary is to see beyond, in and out of time and space at any location. So immediately, instantaneously, without much effort, I'm seeing oceans, I'm seeing my drinking water, I'm seeing the cycle complete itself through that activity. And I use that as an example because it's one that we can sort of see and identify, you know, right, particularly right now. Many smokers have sort of been, you know, forced by law into, you know, what we consider, and I'm being humorous, you know, the cracked spaces of our world. You know, you're standing outside this billion-dollar building, shivering in 32 below zero weather, holding your cigarette, you know, and again, the most simplest cipher by which we can view this through is value. Our value affects how we shop, where we shop, with who we spend our money with. You know, we can get on Facebook and be revolutionary and counter-revolutionary and activism and rah, rah, rah. But at the end of the day, your money is countable and you are held accountable through your demonstration. We're still shopping at the same places. The same folks are still getting rich. The same, you know, items, Adama says wood, stone, metal, I'll even say plastic and paper that we've now been given an artificial value to and we're willing to steal and kill for and work 80 hours a week for and put our heart, you know, and our lungs through distress and stress for and injure our backs and our health for and our family structures for, put into a cipher. You come back to value. So what is value? What is human value? How do you define it? Is it your value based on foundation given to you, or is it self-created? Do we value paper because we're told that this is a dollar bill? Did we come to that self-realization on our own? Did we decide, oh, I like this particular type of paper, I'm going to give it a value? How do we value things? Is that self-created? Is it given to us? Where does God or divine order or spirit or ancestral priority fit into your equation of value? Exploring otherwise politically incorrect topic in a way we have not thought about or discussed previously. Is the gay life of less value to you than your own? Is the woman life of less value to you than a man's life? Is the non-Christian, non-Islamic practitioner, non-Rastafarian, non-Jew of less value to you in your order of things? Because ultimately, your agenda determines where you place your value, and it's manifest in your demonstration. What is the value of a life? And does it matter whose life? We are still fresh in digesting Trayvon Martin and the court case and the effects, the long-term effects it's going to have on the parents and the family and the community. What is the value of life? And what about the Tina Martins and the females and the girls and the women who are also victimized, who don't get the same level of excitement, whose causes don't become a movement in the same way? And that's just in our country. We can then step out into other countries, other cultures, other atrocities, other news headlines, and ask ourselves, what is the value of life? How do we read about that in the newspaper, online, in the news, on TV, on the billboard, and continue on as if, you know, it's just another day because it happened at what we consider a distance? What's the value of a distance? Is it easier for you to walk over hunger, you know, at a distance versus what you got to pass on the way into your building every day? And why does it have to be prepackaged with Sally Struthers and some tears to get us to spend millions of dollars to fund these campaigns when we could just as easily deny those who are hungry, those who are without, those who are struggling, those who are disenfranchised, who we see and come in contact with every single day? And what is the value of that life? Some of us, through religion and an oddity of structures, can claim to support community, claim to support a movement, claim to support grassroots, and have family go without. Sisters and brothers, children, nieces, nephews, cousins, people you know, you got blood ties to, not give a care about their well-being, the nurture of their children, the nurture of their generation, the individuals. I was briefly discussing online earlier today about a comment that I saw in the last 24 hours, which sort of suggested that anyone over 40 who is involved in religion is doing so because they don't have a husband or a wife, they're not married, they don't have children, as if married life is of some value greater than single life, as if procreation within itself is a value that we need to sort of uphold as a, if not more than we would someone who committed to getting an education, committed to furthering a skill, committed to building a movement or a business or an endeavor that affected the greater hood of their community. And we see the repercussions, good and bad, of that thought process every day. That's why teen pregnancy was one of the first things on my list. When we talk about value of life, when we talk about abortion, when we talk about adoption, and then get into more complicated topics, black child adoption, all the black children that go unadopted, or the celebrities and the politicians that are now going to Africa and exploiting the black children through adoption, and then weigh that against us adopting our own, caring for our own, walking over our own, being concerned about our own. I don't want to hear your crap about value. there are many ways we can, and I wish to, and we will be addressing this topic, both today and moving forward. And again, this is something Spirit has pressed me to do. From a business perspective, from a social perspective, from a politically correct perspective, I could have very well not done this show or this topic. Or I could have done it in a very superficial way and touched on the things that we stereotypically touch on, kept in the lane with the vibration of the day, rather than to take it to another level. But it's something that's been sort of brewing with me and in my spirit for some time. Often, how I do my shows, particularly here of late, is a direct result of scheduling. Timing, scheduling, what's really going on. Did I get a last-minute casting call? Is there some other event? You know, and I kind of work my way around that to do a show. And I know for some of you, it presents a sort of an inconsistency in terms of my scheduling. But I'm growing right now. I'm in a process of evolution. I'm doing a lot of things. Some would even say I've bitten off more than I could chew. But I'm doing, as Spirit would have me to do. So sometimes when I do a show like this, it's not because I wanted to or had time to. Some of you know, particularly those of you locally, I had some places to be today, particularly around that 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock hour. It's probably a second line going on right now that I'm missing that I should be in. But I'm a spiritualist first. Spirit has its way with me first. Spirit in all of its diversity of manifestations, the ancestors, the Orisha, the Lawa, our guide, the angelic forces, God herself. I respond to Spirit. And I have not found evidence as a left-brained person that I am to discount my doing so, making that the priority. So this show, this topic, Spirit is pushing its way forward. And we must address what is being laid before us for examination. In the spirit of self-rights and human rights, civil rights, individual rights, animal rights, child rights, women's rights, and all the counter to that. One day I'm hearing we need to empower our women. I'm hearing the black woman is God. I'm hearing we need to go back to the ways of old. I'm hearing we need to understand that God was first a woman. All of that true. But then on the flip side, the next day, women's liberation movement was a plot, was some kind of scheme, was some kind of government exploitive, lesbian driven, you know, all the negatives that we can all identify with, and we all know these stories, and we all see these posts, and we all see these trending topics. And what is that? Are we in support of women or are we not in support of women? And then when we take that back into our ATR, into our traditional-based religious system, trying to be indigenous, trying to understand what indigenous society was, trying to make sense of indigenous spirituality and religion and practice, but then trying to do that to a modern Western cipher is improper. It's like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. And no, it does not work. And you cannot expect it to work. And then it feeds into the negatives that are being propagated all around us that want to remove religion from the equation anyway, that want to remove race from the equation anyway, that want to remove cultural understanding anyway. And as I attempted to demonstrate through someone else's post yesterday, religion, from an African perspective, is nature. It is nature. And so, therefore, it is natural for the indigenous person, the African person, to be involved in, to participate in, to have a mindset, a mind process, a thought process that leads towards religion. It's in nature. And that opens a gateway of other topics, subtopics that I want to bring in to the equation in terms of helping you to sort of understand the message that Spirit is having me to bring forward for you today. And one of those things is natural selection. Natural selection is the gradual natural process by which biological traits become either more or less common in a population as a function of the effects of inherent traits on the differential reproductive success of organisms interacting with their environment. And in English and in common everyday language, we, and when I say we, not just humanity, but animals, plants, the planet itself, if you will, we breathe, we inhale, we exhale, we gain, we release. As we need things, we further develop them. As we don't need things, as we fall out of usage with certain things, whether it's a body function, a body part, and a level of intelligence, it is said that we don't use the totality of our brains anymore. Based on whether you're in a light environment, a dark environment, a cool environment, a warm environment, you're going to further develop certain aspects of your being, and other aspects of your being, of your survival, get tucked away. And natural selection might even suggest we lose them. Grandma used to say, if you don't use it, you lose it. She meant that literally. You know, if I keep coming in and these toys on the floor, they're going out. But she also meant that in terms of our skill level, our knowledge level, our ability to do things and to create things and to make things, we fall out of practice. You play the piano as a child, you lose that if you don't continue that as a teen. Into your 20s, into your 30s, into your 40s. And we can, and I have gone back and picked up things, reanimated things that I once was proficient in at a later point in my life. And whether it's a blessing or a natural occurrence, for the most part, I've always been able to sort of redevelop that thing. A great example is the sewing. Now involved with being an Indian in New Orleans culture. If you don't do it on a regular basis, you can fall out of usage of a skill. But it's also said and widely understood that once you know something, you truly never lose it. Many of us heard that while learning to ride a bike. You know, you learn to ride a bike, and if you truly learn to ride a bike, even if you don't do so, for some period of time, you get to a place where it sort of goes on reserve, but you don't really lose that. And you polish up your skills and you can, you know, bring certain things back to proficiency, I should say. But even, you know, we still have to consider other factors, age, certain levels of skill, you know, will never be what they are right now, today, under the present understanding that we have about biology and health and age, when we look at history, particularly the Bible and the Quran and other old world texts, they talk about people living to be hundreds of years old. And naturally, their skill level, their senses, their vision, their hearing, certain things had to be proficient enough to carry a person into that length of an age. So when we look at our little short lifespan of what it, 72.3, I think it is. I think it varies for men and women, but in our ability to remember, to comprehend, you know, you got 35-year-old folks talking about they getting old. You got 45-year-old folks talking about they getting old. And on many levels, going back to our interdimensional universe, our interdimensional reality, we breathe life into those very things that we think that we know, that we say that we know, that we see with our understanding, with our demonstration. So therefore, that which we value tends to get a greater amount of our attention. Those who value their body, their look, their health, their physique, their fitness, for various reasons, if that's truly their value, that tends to be where their energy goes. That tends to be their first thought, their second thought, their third thought, if you will. It's natural for them to move in a way that supports that health. And that can be applied to intellectual health, spiritual health. We can even take it into musical health, athletic health, artisan skills. Those of us who sew and bead, we're using our hands, we're using our eyes, we're using thought forms and thought processes that we've done so many times over, we don't have to think about in terms of execution. You know, we can look up every moment or so and make sure we're on par. But I can crochet with my eyes closed. I've done it so many times. I've done it enough times. I can inner-visualize that process. I can even correct without opening my eyes, without really thinking a whole lot about it. So what we value is where we put our energy. For many of us, we've been forced into an economic valued way of viewing things, a monetary value way of looking at things. We give our most attention to those things that bring us the most income. You're focusing on your job right now because in your present state of understanding, that's going to pay your bills, that's going to keep the food on your table, and you're unable to see other options that may be available to you, other skills you may already have, other talents you might already have in place, other needs around you which may need to be met, which could have a multi-varied positive outcome for all parties involved. But we have to start somewhere in the thought process, in the planning process, in the meditative process, in the preparatory process. And we need to start, we should start, we often do start, I'm going to suggest, naturally at a place of value. How we value, what we value, and the agenda. Naturally, seed, stone, natural product, resource products have a very different value in the so-called third world, in the so-called rural areas, in the so-called areas where, you know, a plastic bottle has a greater value. Here in America, here in the suburbs, here in the city, we see that everywhere. But then even here in New Orleans, you know, you got the guy that comes through with the cart, the old lady who comes through with the shopping basket, who understands that value, who sees that value, who desires that value, who picks up that plastic, who picks up that can, who recycles those items that we have devalued through our own processes. So that is sort of an opening, if you will, an introduction, if you will, to what I want to discuss today and moving forward in terms of this topic and in terms of understanding this topic and why I wanted to have this discussion. And we will be forward with more of the Power Lunch with the Divine Prince, House of the Divine Prince type hosts and Hoodoo Central here on Block Talk Radio momentarily. I will be forward. All is a blessing. Hi, Bobo. This morning, I overheard Councilman John Lewis of the historic, legendary civil rights fame remind us that one man, one vote was an original African concept, that it moves from African movements into the civil rights movement. It was not a quote-unquote civil rights African-American creation, if you will. And it set me off to thinking about all of our various positions and attitudes politically as it relates to voting, not voting, the justice system, the political system, what we think or don't think, believe or don't believe about that. And ultimately, what our true role is, and balancing that with our demonstration. So you would be hard-pressed to not acknowledge the increase, particularly in the last 20 or 30 years, with repatriation in indigenous culture, spiritual practice and religion, third world consciousness, if you will, for lack of better words, and how strongly some of us have built a platform in these varying subject matter. But when we balance that with our demonstration, with the actualization of our reality, we have to really question agenda and the truthfulness and authenticness of what many of us say we believe and we stand upon. Even for myself, the notion of thinking in any type of indigenous way, any type of African way, old world way, if you will, while still trying to struggle to exist in the concrete jungle makes absolutely no sense. And it's not a judgment, if you will, because again, I personally had to come to that realization for myself. Me and some of my online contacts have been discussing that in a renewed way here of late. Many more considering moving, where to move to. But the simplest move you can make is to the south. When we talk about survival, when we talk about water, when we talk about produce, when we talk about clean living, when we talk about natural living, you're talking about coming south. You may not be able to afford Africa. You may not be able to afford Haiti or Brazil or Puerto Rico at this time. And that within itself is another conversation. Because I have another elder, as we discussed priority, as we discussed value, she brought forward the message, a powerful message that she received from the ancestors about where we place our value. And as us as descendants of those bought and sold into enslavement, who now, again, struggle to exist, survive, support ourselves within this very system that does not want us, she strongly suggested and said that the ancestors had made clear to her we were giving our resources back by continuing this process of educating ourselves, working in this system, retiring in this system, many of us with very little or nothing. I don't have a pension. I don't have a retirement plan. I'm going to have to survive on my skill, my talent, what I can do, what I can make, what I can perform moving forward. And at one time, that was the natural process, as the value of water, of food, of housing, of many of the things that we need have been sort of manipulated over some time. So when we're discussing value, we have to consider where we're spending our money, what we're investing in, or who we're making wealthy, who we're making rich outside of our communities, outside of ourselves, and what does that really mean in terms of our authentic positions, as various as they are, religious, political, nationhood, all those talks that we get so vehemently heated up about on Facebook, so much so that the littlest of thing, you know, and I wake up and, you know, five people then dropped. And it could be the most trivialist, most pettiest point of argument. And at the end of the day, most of us are not living up to our rhetoric. Most of us are not investing in what we say we're investing in, and are putting in, and not putting our value and our resources on what we truly value. But the reality is, our demonstration speaks clearly to all things. And so, as we argue nationhood, as we argue religion, as we argue ethnicity, as we argue belief, as we argue religion and all this other stuff, at the end of the day, our money right now, our resources right now, what we're supporting right now, what we're feeding into right now, and whether you say you have to or not, you're backed into a corner, my kids got to eat, I got to have gas for my car, all those things break down into value. And ultimately, what you truly believe, what you truly know to be true, what you're truly standing on, you're investing in that. And I've said in previous shows, I would not have to charge for spiritual services. I would not have to charge for readings if we invested and brought value back to those things that we say we truly bring value in. And I'm not even necessarily talking about money. Food resources, service resources, skill and talent resources, value, if you haven't figured it out now in an hour and 15 minutes, value has a multi-leveled understanding. It's a variety of ways that we can look at and address this concept of a value. And we're going to do just that momentarily moving forward. I will be forward. All is a blessing. Ashe.
Amen. Amen. Vous êtes la vie nouée. Papa, petit, petit, là, le bon tabou pira, tout ça qui calme pas bouger. Vous êtes la vie nouée, mes amis.
divine, all blessed. I am always humbled and grateful by your continued support and listenership to the show. To those who listen, who comment, who interact because of this show, but also those who support with their time, their resources, and their money. Because at the end of the day, it's about value and agenda. And value and agenda are supported with our activity and our most valued resources, our money. I shared a document by way of my Facebook.com/TheDivinePrince that I found doing some research online. And this person's blog, Julian Apagand, his blog, If Black America Were a Country, really is a story of my life. Not so much my life, but my life path, if you will, how I ended up where I am today, what research I did, what numbers influenced my decisions. So I'm going to share that with you momentarily moving forward, and I also want to ask you to stay with me as I do have some local announcements for Congo Square and the community that I do want to share. Otherwise, I will be remiss in my job and my duty. If Black America were a country, it would have 37 million people. Now, this document was done in 2010. The number may very well be higher or lower. For the sake of our point, I don't think that's relevant, but the number is critical to thinking and how we value things. And again, our demonstration, ultimately, what we believe, what we say we believe, what we say we know, who we say we are, and what we're representing is backed up by what we do. And what you do can undermine every principle, every value, every theory that you publicly state and stand on can be undermined simply by our demonstration. And a critical part of our demonstration right now is how we spend our money. So if Black America were a country, it would have 37 million people, which is just about the number of people who live in 6 of the 7 blackest states: Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. And some may even add Texas to that list. So for me, I'm about a particular type of people, of a particular ethnicity, a particular culture, a particular race, if you will. Excuse me. Number one on the list is Louisiana. I moved to Louisiana. The facts and the figures, the numbers in parentheses, which I'm going to read out loud, show its world rank out of 224 of the top countries with countable economies, if you will. And Black America is being treated as one of those, as a country, if you will, for the sake of this study and this count. So Black America as a country, population 37 million, would rank number 35 out of 224 countries that we can count, that we can measure economy, intake, output, etc. So we would have a combined shared area of 731,000 square kilometers, which would make us number 38 out of 224 countries. Our capital would be Atlanta. And I've tried Atlanta 3 different times over a course of 3 years. And it just was not a place for me. But I can understand the overall attraction to Atlanta, particularly in the 1990s into the early 2000s. But things have changed on many levels with Atlanta. But Atlanta would still be, as of 2010, the capital of this Black America if we were counted as a country unto ourselves. And our largest cities would be Atlanta, Charlotte, New Orleans, and Birmingham. Check number two for why I came to New Orleans. Our language would be English. Now, we can debate Ebonic, Spanish, Creole, you know, all the other stuff all day long, but our common commerce language would be English. The religion count, 80% Protestant, mostly Baptist, 5% Catholic, 1% Muslim, which is a high number by comparison, 1% other, which would be us, Hoodoo, Voodoo, Obia, ATR, Lakomi, Ifa, legitimate Ifa practitioners, Akan, Sangoma, those of us who are legitimately adhering on a regular basis enough that we would show up in the count, we would be 1%, and 13% would be classified as having no religion. I'm not even going to touch that. We could do a whole show on just 13% no religion. Economy. Now, GDP, our gross domestic product, would be $892 billion. $892 billion, which would make us number 17 out of 224 countries. The gross domestic product per capita would be 24,100, which would make us number 55 out of this list of 224 countries. And let that marinate. 24,100. To many of you, American, Black, African American, Africans living in America, you would laugh at 24,000. So 24,000 is the cost of some of you all's vehicle. It's less than some of the cost of some of you all's vehicle. You'd be hard pressed to find a $24,000 house nowadays. You might be able to do that, pull that off in the South, but you're still going to have to do something to it. Still going to need some work, and still going to need some further investment. But you might actually be able to find a $24,000 house, maybe. But a lot of you can identify through your car, and a lot of you do identify through your car, and you're driving more than a $24,000 car right now. The class structure numbers would be 40% middle class. 40% of the African Americans are middle class. 29% would be considered working class. So some of you, I would argue, are middle class. And I have argued with some of you about whether you are truly working class or middle class. Based on where I am and based on where poor people, which make 25%, fall in this count. Education would be 20%. Of those 25 years or older have a university degree. 20% of those 25 or older out of the count of 37 million, making us number 35 on the list of countries with the highest GDP, makes us a high number in comparison. Now, for many of us, it doesn't compare with our everyday reality in some ways. And I think that is a testament to the fact that some of our quote-unquote everyday reality is an illusion or is at least boxed into your focused reality. And if you don't step out of that sometimes, as my elder told me, you got to get out of this country and see it. You got to go to Haiti. You got to go to Jamaica. You got to go to Ghana. You got to go to Nigeria and see for yourself before you can really make sense of some things and even these numbers to some degree. And you will understand why, particularly Nigerians who are said to have the highest educational level in the world, in America, would come here and wonder why we aren't putting to use our resources in a very different way. And that's not to say some very American, Babylon, Western world things aren't happening in Nigeria. We know that to be a fact. And we know religion, particularly Islamic Christianity, are playing a big role in that. But taking on these numbers as a spiritual person, as a spiritualist, as a philosopher, as someone who is on a spiritual journey, it really begins to jog your position and make you either comfortable or uncomfortable and redetermine and readdress and relook at where you are and where you need to be to not only be effective for yourself but for the community. And to be able to justify some of these hardcore revolutionary positions some of y'all have, which these numbers would back up and verify to be bullshit, especially the $892 billion that we are spending on things that have nothing to do with us, have nothing to do with building our community, have nothing to do with black consciousness, have nothing to do with ATR and its various and diverse religious paths and institutions and keeping them together and making sure that they survive into the future. It has everything to do with $192 billion, 17th gross domestic product in the world, into someone else's pocket. Our life expectancy is an average of 72.8 years. Fertility, 2.1 children. Infant mortality, 13.4 per 1,000 live births. 131 in the world in terms of highest domestic, gross domestic product that list of 224 countries. And they have AIDS deaths on this list, which I find peculiar, but I'm going to share that it's 7,100 in the year of 2007, which is, 5 years away, 6 years away. So we need updated information on that. But I would also want to see high blood pressure. I would also want to see diabetes, which I think is an even better marker. When we look at ethnicities who we feel to this day stereotypically identify as being healthier, eating healthier, for instance, Asians, those who are now exposed to Western culture, American culture, European culture, now have a higher incidence of diabetes, high blood pressure, as well as HIV/AIDS. So I think some other factors in terms of health, and I'm sure Adama Aleji would agree, need to be considered in that. These comparisons, it has as many people as Poland, but makes 30% more money and would have more than twice as much land. Or we make as much money as Australia, but have twice as many people to support. Better comparisons would be the West Indies, the black English-speaking part of the Caribbean, for example. Black America has about the same GDP per capita as Trinidad and Tobago. Our life expectancy and infant mortality are at Jamaica's level. Think about that, Jamaica's level. And some of us find Jamaica to be abhorrently violent. But we're looking at it in a mirror of ourselves, according to these numbers. And, of course, we would mirror Jamaica in terms of religion, language, and history. So despite the revolutionary, Rasta, Maroon, stamp that we give to Jamaica, the numbers bear out that they're still predominantly Christian, Protestant, mind you, 80% Protestant, 5% Catholic, 1% Muslim, and then 1% other. And this is not just, you know, I believe this religion, I practice this religion. These numbers are backed up by population, but also by the amount of money that we're spending. So don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining about your commitment to Orisha, your commitment to Alawa, your commitment to getting your initiations done, your commitment to culture, your commitment to grassroots, your commitment to Maroon, and, oh, but I ain't got time to be no suit. I can't figure out how to come up with any money for that or how to support you in maintaining that. But we want to honor culture. We want to applaud when it comes time to take those pictures. But we want to be a part of the demonstration, Mardi Gras Day, but we don't understand the sacrifice these families and these Indians and these participants are doing every day of the year to make this happen. Myself falling behind in my rent, falling behind in my bills, so that I can do grassroots cultural things, so that I can donate time, so that I can donate money, so I can donate resources to things that I say that I truly believe in and support with my time and my resources. I have a corporate membership in Congo Square, corporate membership in Ashe, not an individual one, which would be cheaper if I were counting dollars. And many of you are counting dollars. Our prosperity members survive on the hope and the anticipation and the guarantee that you all are counting those dollars. And that's why you continue to fill those pews. You want that car, you want that look, you want that lifestyle. But then we say we're African. And then we say we're committed to the grassroots causes. Where's your true value? We say we're committed to our children and their futures. Yet we won't change our eating habits. We won't change our lifestyle. We won't exercise. We won't do the things that ensure that we'll be there when they need us to be there, that we can perform when they need us to perform. Heck, we won't do that for ourselves. So we give a lot of lip service to community. We give a lot of lip service to organization. We give a lot of lip service to revolution. We give a lot of lip service to activism. We give a lot of lip service to spirituality and religion, or the lack thereof. Because at the end of the day, you know, whether you believe in religion or not, what the hell are you doing? Besides talking and getting a lot of people worked up online, and some of you have convinced yourself that you're in a position of education, but I'm getting the word out, and I'm making sure that people know, and you're 200 pounds overweight. You couldn't walk a march. That's why you're anti-march. You couldn't vote because you don't know enough about who your legislators are and your councilmen are and your mayor is and your president is and what's going on in your neighborhood and what the laws are and how they affect you and yours to make a committed, intelligent vote. And we've got to begin to look at value. When we read these posts, when we see these posts, when we see these videos, we need to be asking, what is the agenda? And where have they placed their value? I find it interesting. We get caught up in the momentum of the words and miss some of the very obvious things right there next to their head, right there in the background, you know, that truly give you some understanding of where the mindset really is, where the agenda really is, where the value is truly being placed. How many pictures do we need to see of you in your car? Hello. And I'm sick of the car being used in that way, especially now as we move towards a greener society and we're changing our understanding about fuel consumption and cost, and green fuels and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sick of seeing people roll around, but you won't pick up a 70-year-old lady and make sure she gets back and forth to the grocery store. You don't make sure your neighbors, who you know don't have transportation, who you know are participating, who you know are active, who you know are doing things they can't afford for the greater community, and you don't even make sure I can get to the park and back. You don't give a damn if I can make it to my acting job or not. But then you judge me because someone of another ethnicity stands up and says, I'll make sure you get there. I'll make sure that you get to where you need to be. So we've got to stop, you know, don't even argue, don't even get in there with, you know, is it religion, is it politics? What is your agenda? What is the value? Where is the value being placed? Follow the money, if you will. And the main difference between us, Black America, as a quote-unquote country versus the rest of the quote-unquote Black world, or specifically, I should say, Trinidad, Tobago, Jamaica, the Caribbean, the rest of the Americas, is that we became an inner colony and not an outer one. And we need to address that, particularly when we start talking about maroon nations, maroon consciousness, maroon mentality. We don't think North America, we don't think the West Coast, we don't think Kenya and the East Coast. And I say follow the money, follow enslavement. And the main difference with us being an inner colony versus an outer one is main resource. The main resource here in America was cheap labor. And that still, to a great degree, is true. Only percent of America's income comes from Black-owned businesses. Only 10% of our GDP comes from Black-owned businesses. Let me correct that. Only 10% of our own gross domestic product comes from Black-owned businesses. Nearly all of the rest comes from doing underpaid work for white folks, for the system, for the government, for the electric company, for the water company, for the gas company, for the technology hub. If there are any advantages, there would be way more Black businesses. The court, the police, the prisons would no longer be in white hands, nor would the schools, the history books, or the press. Nor would the labor and housing markets, nor would policy on crime, drugs, education, and poverty. It would be easier to mount a Black film in fashion industry through Hollywood, though Hollywood would probably still be big, just not as big. And not only would much of the white racism be cut out, but internalized racism would be lessened considerably, too, if we were a Black country and understood our growth. Domestic product. Colorism, though, might get worse. And this document, because I know I'm sort of speeding through it because I'm running out of time, can be found on my Facebook page at facebook.com/ The Divine Prince. And he adds another note on Black savage rule. I know some readers believe that Blacks are incapable of self-government. And he would ask that we look at Zimbabwe. But even Steve Saylor would have to admit that an independent Black America, even with an average IQ of 89, would be run way better than anything in Black Africa, where the IQ is 70. That 89 puts it on a level with Latin America, or because of the Flynn effect with white America in the 1950s. So I would implore you to look at this document. There are several other links to some other important documents here at our Gond blog, which can be found on my Facebook page at facebook.com/ The Divine Prince. But there are many more topics that I wish to cover and plan to cover even today. but we will bring forward into coming shows. I also want to quickly make the announcement that the Revolutionary Marie and the legacy that is Marcus Garvey and his movement and his teachings and his philosophies being embedded in the Maroon culture, spirituality, and religion to include voodoo and Obia. I'm probably not going to be able to do that show Monday. I will be on a movie set, so I'm going to try and bring that on Tuesday. I also want to take the time to remind you and tap into the spirit of the weekend and announce a community advisory as hosted by Baba Luka Graham and Congo Square. Congo Square is the place of remembrances. And Luther provides his contact number 504-495-0463. His email is babaluther@gmail.com. This weekend, civil rights leaders and civil rights movement and many civil rights accomplishments are being recognized through a 50-year anniversary mark in time, if you will. This weekend, while thousands of people are traveling to Washington, D.C. to take part in the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, D.C., the Congo Square Preservation Society will host a commemoration of New Orleans civil rights heroes, Marcus Garvey's birthday, and the 8th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina with members of Bambula 2000, Muhammad Yungay, Seth 45, the Congo Square Drum and Dance Circle, the Pride guests, and the community. The Congo Square Preservation Society began in 1989. Sunday gatherings are free and open to the public. Participants are urged to bring a percussive and musical instrument. We generally begin around 2 p.m. on Sunday. This will be a very special Sunday, August 25th, 2013, from 2 to 5 p.m. As many from our community attend this historic march in Washington, D.C., the drumming and dance events here in our community give us an opportunity to connect and to celebrate alongside them in spirit, in practice, and in truth. So remember with us in Congo Square, Sunday, August 25th, 2013, for a very special Congo Square Preservation Society Sunday at 2 p.m. in Congo Square. Remember those lost in Hurricane Katrina. Remember and honor Marcus Garvey's birthday. Remember and honor the 50-year time marker, if you will, because there's much more work to be done as it relates to civil rights, human rights, moving forward. We also remember that 2013 marked several major civil rights milestones. Commemorating with us in Congo Square, 2 p.m. tomorrow, all is indeed a blessing. Kalinda and I and many other members of our community will be bringing forward the altar. We ask that you come, bring your offerings to the altar space, gather around the tree, honor Graham Gua Ayibobo. We give thanks, and of course, I appreciate you for continuing to listen and to support the Power Lunch, Hoodoo New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes here on Blog Talk Radio. And I also want to quickly invite you to begin to send your offerings and your donations in terms of our Beating Black Hawk Indian, Black Hawk Voodoo Maroons for 2014. We are in the process of beating our suits. We need all the resources we can possibly receive, and we're humbled in the receiving. We thank you. We appreciate you. We give thanks. All is a blessing. Ashe.
Congo Square. The Omis Indians. The Omis Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. A sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. The Omis Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. Congo Square, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. And as the colonizers came, our host, the Olmos Indians, they pushed aside our host. The colonizers came and pushed aside our host and introduced us in chains. And by the late 1700s, we somehow, recognizing the sacredness of Le Place de Congo, we somehow, and the how of our somehow persuasive methodologies is not clear at this moment. The how is not clear. How our persuasive methodologies work is not clear at this moment, but nevertheless, even as slaves, we crafted and created a space where we could be free to be we. And thusly we countered the sacrilegiousness of the French, giving great homage to our ancestors as well as giving praise and thanks to our red-blooded brothers and sisters. This is an oral libation toast to Congo Square, to Native Americans, to our ancestors who made a circle out of a square and gave us a way to stay ourselves, save ourselves from the transformatory ugliness of America, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life and celebrates death with crosses and crosses, double and triple crosses, the middle passage, the first cross, Christianity, the double cross, and capitalism, the ultimate triple coup de grace cross of our captivity. But the terror of crosses notwithstanding, we sang, we beat, we be, we was and is. Hail Congo Square, Congo, Congo Square. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us. Inside the beat of us. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us until we are ready to release them into a world that we recreate. A world heralded by the beat. Be, beat, being, beating, being of black heart drums. Heart beat. Heart beat. Heart be at this place. At this place. Be heart beat. Be we beating place in new world space. Beating, being in place in new world, preserving our ancient pace. Our dance is the God walk, our music the God talk. First thing we do, let's get together, circle ourselves into community. No beginning, no end, connected together and singing, ringing, singing in a ring. Second, let's be original, aboriginal. Be what we were before we became what we are. Be Bambula dance, be Banza music, and sing song words which have no English translation. Third, let us remember. Let us remember never to forget. Even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. Let us remember never to forget. Even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. The bounce, the blood, flow, the feel, the spirit, grow, energy, must retain and pass on the essential usness that others want to dissipate with out of us.
Whoa!
But no matter. No matter how much of us they prohibit. No matter how much of us they prohibit. Deep inside us is us. Deep inside us is us. Remains us inside and needs only the beat to set us free. The beat to free us. It is morning. A sun day. A feel. A feel. Without shade, but dark. Dark with the people black of us in various shades, eclipsing the sun with our elegance. We are centuries later now, and still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to beat, to be. We are centuries later now, and still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to beat, to be. Beat Congo Square. Be Congo Square. Beat. Be. Beat. Be. Congo Square. Be Congo Square. Be. Be. Be.